Prior to this, I was also a product manager, so I think of product operations like my product. So with the product management mindset, what I did, I started a discovery phase to understand what were the main problems that we had in the company. So it was really important for us to have an enablement area to support us, to improve the efficiency of the product management team, to help us standardize processes, improve communication, make the change on something that is important for people.
How big must be a company to have product operations?
What can I say? For me, product operations is relevant in any organization, regardless of the size.
I'm Maria, and this is the Agile State of Mind. Welcome. And welcome to the podcast edition where I talk about all things Scrum and Agile with my colleagues. And today I have with me Anabella Cesario. Hi, Anabella.
Hi, Maria. Nice to be here. It's really lovely, a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. Lovely to have you. I'm so thrilled for our conversation today. Anabella is a product ops leader and the chief of staff to the CPO in OutSystems. We worked together for some time when I also worked in OutSystems. That's how we know each other. And Anabella bootstrapped a very interesting practice from zero. It's product operations. And that's the topic of our conversation today. I would like to understand what it means, what it is to be product operations person, what's the difference between the PMs, engineering operations, and all other operations that you have in the company. And I also have some my own agenda for this conversation, which is especially the part of when we already start talking about the product operations, like how do you prioritize, what do you use, which tools do you use for the big prioritization of the company initiatives. So that will be our conversation today. So Anabella, before we go to the core of the conversation, I would like to understand the second part of your role, because apart from being the product operations leader, you are also chief of staff to the CPO. Could you explain that? I have no idea what that means.
Of course. Okay, I think the simplest way of looking at a chief of staff is you can see a chief of staff as a person who acts as the right hand of the executive. Like, for instance, you could be a chief of staff of a VP, of a CPO, a CTO, etc. And in top companies, the chief of staff responsibilities are similar to those of her executive. For instance, in my case, my responsibilities come from my CPO's key areas of responsibility. My goal is to extend and maximize the efficiency of the overall product management team. And I'm focused on three main areas. The first is assisting on product strategy, definition, deployment, and monitoring. Everything that helps us to have a strong product strategy aligned with our company strategy. The second one is focused on creating a sustainable and healthy team management system. Everything around team org, team motivation, team training, team development, and especially how we collaborate with other areas. For instance, in our case, we work very closely with engineering and product marketing. So it's one of my key responsibilities to help on that. And the third one is the overall ability to execute and monitor progress on the team main initiatives. Whenever we have a big initiative that impacts the product, the company, I'm there to ensure that it's successful.
Okay, so we could say that the company doesn't need the CPO anymore with you there, right?
You can say it that I made my CPO life much, much easier.
Nice to have you then for the CPO for sure. Okay, so it's also, it's like a vice president of a president, right? Whenever the CPO is not there, you could just fill in to the role.
It's a very, very interesting role, especially because you are exposed to all the company business, all the C-level important decisions, and you are able to learn a lot on the job. So it's amazing. Nice. I really like it.
So now I understand that this is like a very smooth transition into the product operations part of what you do, because from what you're saying, I guess that just developed naturally, right?
It is. It's the two functions have a lot in common. So imagine you need to improve the efficiency and make your CPO life easier, and you have the support of product operations to help you on that. So it's a very good collaboration and integration of the two areas or the two job functions.
Okay. And could you explain, maybe we could start with, how did it come about to actually bootstrap the new practice? And especially because, as I understand at least, you haven't ever been a product operations person. So you had to learn while implementing. Was that so?
It was. I think the need came from the situation that we were back then. We were in a hyper growth stage, and we really need to double the size of the teams in a short period of time. So it was really important for us to have an enablement area to support us on that, to improve the efficiency of the product management team, to help us standardize processes, improve communication, help PMs with the change management process that we need to put in place to grow from a startup, having the startup mindset, startup way of doing product, to this really hyper growth stage. So the need comes from that. And as you said, it was my first time working on product operations. So I remember that I Googled it. And back then in 2020, oh my God, it was a lot of time ago. We didn't have a lot of people working on product operations. So I understood that every company tailors product operations to their own need. And we did that. We look inside and giving just also having some color to this. Prior to this, I was also a product manager. So I think of product operations like my product. So with the product management mindset, what I did, I started a discovery phase to understand what were the main problems that we had in the company, in the PM and in the collaboration. So I had a really important view of the main problems and how product ops could help. And in 1 month, we talked with 60 stakeholders and we raised 76 main concerns. Okay, the main problems, and some of the problems were really simple. So PMs were saying to us, okay, I never did product in scale. So how can I do it? Can you help me? Or the field teams, they didn't understood the roadmap. So can you guys help me to understand, to be closer to PM? So this type of simple, but though impactful problems. And then we prioritized all of these problems, the needs that we had to address. And based on that, I bootstrapped the group with a team of 3 product operations managers. And then we focus on the 3 main things in the beginning, what I call the foundations for product excellence, that is standardize the processes, the tools, and the communication. The second one was really about communication, having someone focus on improving the communication across the company. And the third one, having someone supporting the growth of the PMs. So that was very, very summarized way what we did in the beginning.
Okay, that sounds really great. And especially that you put your PM skills to work and to do discovery and, you know, interview your customers. Who are actually the customers? Because you said you interviewed 60 stakeholders. Who were there? Were they only PMs or also other people from the company?
The way we describe this is PMs are our customers. We work to serve PMs, and the stakeholders are all the other company areas. And I'm talking about engineering, you have engineer leader, a developer, all of the roles in engineering. We also talk with salespeople, with solution architects, customer success managers, all the other roles that we have in a product-led company.
So everybody who's, let's say, collaborating with the PMs. So yeah, they are affected somehow. And what about the POs? Because I know that it's a separate practice. Are POs as well your customers, or are they?
No, they are our stakeholders as well.
Okay.
The way we have it nowadays, I think you can look at this depending on the company. In some companies, POs are also PMs. What differs is the activities that they execute. POs are much more focused on improving the efficiency of the engineering team. So they are there to support, give all the team all the context that they need to understand the problem, the customer, the market. But they are working with them on the sprints, on the user stories definition, on the success criteria, and so on. And in this case, we see POs, in our case, because they are in engineering, they are our stakeholders, but we work in collaboration with them. So when we are improving our product development lifecycle, POs are a key role with whom we work on a daily basis. So whenever we want to improve the processes in PM, we always talk with them and interact with them.
Okay, that's really interesting how you started it. I really love the story and the discovery and all. So my question is, how big must be a company to have product operations? Because I understand that we already spoke a little bit about what you do as product operation. Do you think any company could have product operation? Because it sounds like you would have to be like really big to have the return on investment from a new practice, right?
What can I say? For me, product operations is relevant in any organization, regardless of the size. And it is important, and it's easy to justify the investment in big product-led companies, and especially in organizations that are in the hypergrowth stage. That said, I do believe that even small companies should also have a product operations team. But instead, for instance, of having a team of 10 product ops managers, have at least one. Or when you don't have the budget for have one, have half of a person. So dedicate some time of one of your PMs that they really like to improve the efficiency, the processes, to start small working on small improvements. It is really important to have someone dedicated from day one, looking at all the data, listening to the team and all their struggles, or just thinking how we can help them, building what we call a foundation for product excellence. If you have the opportunity, go for it, even if you have some hours a week of a person.
But you said some key word for me, product-led organization. Do you think there are still many organizations that are really sales-led? Do you think then we need a sales ops? Like somebody who would help the sales team? Because in the end, that's where most of the requirements, let's call it, or like needs and from customers come, right? In a sales-led, there would be from salespeople. And in product-led organization, we want the product to be the star. For as far as I know, our systems used to be sales-led organization, right? Like most of the organizations probably at some point.
Okay. My opinion is that our systems always were and is a product-led company. Sometimes sales has a huge influence on the company. And probably you are talking about it, but I think we are not a sales-led company. So sales never decide the strategy of the product and the company. And I think that's something that we are proud of, that we always had our CEO support on having a product focus first. Returning to your main question about ops, the way I see ops, the mission of ops is improving the efficiency of the team that they are serving. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we are focused on product management, the product. So our focus is on improving the processes, the tools, and solve the main issues, the problems that a product management team has. In sales, they are for sure having the same mission, but the processes are different. So they optimize the sales process, they solve the sales issues while we are addressing the product management and probably the product development lifecycle main bottlenecks, for instance.
Okay, so now my question, because you say a lot about efficiency and processes, and that sounds to me a lot like agile coaching and agile delivery and everything that the agile people do in a company. So how do you make sure, and I understand you have them as well in the company, so how do you make sure you don't step all over, it's not even stepping over each other's toes, but more like your work for sure is very valuable, and how do you make sure that what they do and what you do actually goes together and makes sense for everybody? Because I can see a lot of overlaps.
Yeah, part of the things that we do in product operation, it's the functions of agile coach. So we are always looking to understand what are the problems. We are always looking to find the solution. So in this sense, we do some of the things that an agile coach does. The main difference is that besides diagnosing the problem and looking for a solution, we have the tools and the team to support the implementation of the solutions. So from what I understand from agile coach, you guys need to understand the problems, find the solutions, but then you don't have the manpower to solve the problems. Imagine if you guys realize that we really need to have a tool to support some piece of the work. Mm-hmm. For instance, in product management, we had to create a single source of truth for product information. And it could be a agile coach diagnosing the problem, but then having the people to set up and deploy the tool, it's not an agile coach function, right? So I think the main difference is that I have the people that will select the tool, implement the process, document the process, roll out the implementation of the tool, promote best practices. Okay, promote best practice, again, it's an agile coach type of role. Mm-hmm. As well. So they are intertwined. But I think that the way we do it at OutSystems, we don't have agile coach in the product management side. We have in engineering, mm-hmm. and then we collaborate. Again, we identify bottlenecks in engineering, we identify in product, and then we work in collaboration to solve them.
Okay. But then your role is not only to identify, but if you propose solutions, you are also a change agent, right?
Yeah.
So then how do you make sure that people adopt the new, to talk about a real example, was the product board that you implemented in your practice. So you guys are like change agents. And as I understand, you need to be empowered to make all the changes. Otherwise, you would be just finding solutions, like, but nobody would adopt them. And we would have to find consensus in everybody. And that would be very hard. And I know how that is because I am this person that always looks for consensus or at least some kind of democracy. But sometimes I just give up and like, this is what you're going to be doing. So how do you make sure that given that you just say, hey, this is what you're going to be doing because we found this great tool, how do you make sure people actually adopt it and they don't? There's not much resistance. There must be sometimes, but how do you work with that?
So I think I have two things that I do. The first one is that because I interview people from PM to the rest of the company, and I do it on a cadence basis, every 6 months, I conduct a round of interviews. So what are your main pains? What are you struggling now? So usually when I have to do a big change, it comes from what people are saying. So the first thing is that they understand why we need to change something. And then, for instance, in product board, we did like that. So a lot of people told us, oh, we have a lot of Excel spreadsheets to prioritize roadmap, to manage the release and launches and so on. We have a lot of feedback coming from different stakeholders. I have my Excel spreadsheet. The other PM has their own. So all of this was feedback that came from us. So the first step is make the change on something that is important for people. Second, the way you conduct the change management process. And in the product board case, what we did was we list the 6 main use cases from the PM standpoint that led us to select the tool. Imagine, okay, we need to prioritize initiatives. We need to have roadmap views. So we select the ones that are more important for PMs. Then we went to the market and select the tool that best fit our needs. And after that, we did a POC. So based on the main use cases, we work with one champion from the PM team that help us to design a very simple process. So this is really important. So ignore the exceptions. kind of define the happy path, the process that represents 70-80% of the main activities of a PM. And then the team use it for one month and we realize and tweak some minor issues. And after that, we start rolling out to other teams. And in that case, the champion is with you and is the first and biggest promoter of the thing. When people start using it, so it's the big phase, understand the need, deploy the solution, work with the champion and start to roll out. Then comes the really tough part, that is the adoption. So you spoke about it. And then you really need to interact with PMs, always make continuous improvements on the process, understand what is working and not what is not working. And if you are able to keep the process simple, but always improving, PMs start seeing a value of the on the tool and continue using it. I can tell you that we have Product Board, I think this is our third year, and PM using it. So my team is always focused on the adoption, because if the teams don't adopt the product, you don't need the product for anything, of course, right?
Yeah. And especially I see that in some companies that they start with the product board because there's one champion who loved it in their previous company usually. And they start using it. And then you can see that they use it when it's time to create a roadmap. So they use it basically once a quarter and then it gets outdated just the next day after the roadmap has been presented. So it's like, do we really need this tool?
For instance, in our case, we use Product Board and we invest. I was dedicated to the project in the beginning because we use it also as a tool to communicate with the company, with all the areas of the company. So the communication was fragile in the beginning, especially with sales and solution architects. They feel they were very apart from PM. They didn't understood roadmap prioritization and so on. And also roadmap, what will we deliver in the next 3 to 6 months, for instance. And nowadays we have, I would say, 70% of the field giving us feedback on Product Board. Why did we do it? Okay, so we understand that they would like to be closer to PM. So we told them, okay, if you guys give us feedback from the field on the tool, we will give you access to the roadmap earlier, in an earlier stage. Mm-hmm. So you will have access to the information, to the product management, single source of truth. And they love it. So this is kind of a win-win situation. They give us feedback, we process feedback, they understand what we are doing with the feedback, and then they also have access to the roadmap information. So, and I think that's one of the key success factors in our case for the adoption.
Oh yeah, for sure. The more people adopt a tool and not only the PMs, the biggest success. So that's great. And since we are on the subject, that's actually my agenda going into now. How do you make sure you having so many points of input, of information, of needs and what we need in the product, how do you then consolidate that information and prioritize it so you can create a roadmap?
Okay, so you can see the process. We do it in two ways, top down and bottom up. Bottom up, we can say that we having all the feedback nowadays in the Product Board tool, we are able to understand what are the things that are more important to our customers. So what are the feedback that comes from customers, from the field, and so on. So this is one input for the roadmap process. And then we also have the top down. So we have the company vision and strategy. Mm-hmm. And our job as PM is to define the product strategy that addresses the company strategy. And this gives us the direction or the guidelines for, all right, we work with Horizon 1, 2, and 3. And 1 basically is the next year. So we are working on, it's more on the execution of what you have already in place. Horizon 2 usually are 2 years and you are looking more to innovate or to address some big trend in the market, for instance. And we have Horizon 3 that is plus 3 years and you are really predicting and innovating the future. So based on this, we align and define initiatives that may come from the bottom up or the top down.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense. So then so as I understand, you have company vision, and then whatever will appear on that roadmap needs to, so from the company vision, you create like product vision, but you probably also need to create the immediate quarter, right? Because for as much as we want to know what's in the year, it's almost impossible that that will actually happen. Yeah. So who creates that kind of quarter goal? Okay, so
now I'm talking about product board because it's where we do it, but you can map this to the conceptual way of doing it. Okay, so what we do is we have drivers, prioritization drivers that are aligned with the product strategy. Okay, that is aligned with company strategy. So for each initiative, we score the contribution of the initiative to the product strategy execution. So, and we do this, it's not a one moment all, we are doing this every quarter. So we are reprioritizing all the initiatives. And usually the 3 to 6 months, they are already prioritized, they are already been working with engineering, and we need to, based on the priorities that come from the product, and we are much more focused on the value that we want to deliver to the market and to our customers. And then engineering brings some also content to the table. They are concerned about technical debt, quality, somehow technological improvements, and so on. So all of these aspects are considered during the process.
Okay. And when you said that you are doing this kind of, you have the prioritization drivers, they are aligned with your strategy. And now what is it? Is it like a meeting? Is it like a committee who decides on the score? Because, you know, my score can be different than yours. For sure, it will be.
Yeah. Usually we have kind of we have a quarterly planning process. Mm-hmm. Where we look at the prioritization. And then what we do is that the teams can collaborate and give feedback, but ultimately is the product group leader from engineering and PM that decide the prioritization.
I understand they decide on like the score for each, and then the prioritization comes, right? I think product board helps.
Yeah.
Okay. Organizing that.
Say, imagine. I think the discussion at top level is that if I invest in this initiative, will I bring the value that I need? So is this initiative more contributing more to the strategy than the other one? So this is the high level prioritization. Then the teams work on the details. And by details, I'm saying that for this initiative, probably I have 10 user stories or 10 epics. And then the second level of prioritization is done by the teams and not by the leaders. Trying to decentralize the prioritization process.
Okay. There is a global prioritization for the whole company.
Yeah. So you have this top-down, bottom-up process. The leaders mainly prioritize based on the trade-offs that we need to do at the moment on the value that you want to deliver to the customer, versus the investment that we need to do in engineering to improve the quality of the product, to handle the technical debt, and so on. And then having this prioritization, the teams work on prioritization, on drill down the initiatives on epics, user stories. Also really important to have in consideration is the dependencies between teams. So when you are prioritizing at a high level, you don't see how the execution will come across among different engineering teams, right? So we have the direction, and then the teams work and align on the dependencies. And sometimes this can change a little bit the overall dependencies, but it's kind of a second step on the execution. And all of this is, as you know, this is not a simple process. This is one of the most complicated stuff when we are doing product. It's really hard, but we use it in this kind of two phases.
Yeah, I understand. And it's also given there are so many teams in our systems, it's really hard to make sure that people always look at the initiatives they should be looking at. That's the problem. Like, do you sign a team? But how do you know if they should know? But then they might overlook. So it's very complex. I agree. So we are getting to the end of the conversation. It was very interesting. And I love it how practical what you are saying is, because it's not talking about the theory. I don't even know if there is theory about product operations. So maybe at this point you could tell me, like, do you have any favorite books, articles, blogs, or even maybe you can send later on some links to your keynotes, because you are actually a very prolific speaker recently, right, about the topic. So I would like to add the links in the description. If somebody wants to learn more, they can actually watch some of your, because I think you sometimes give very cool keynotes where you explain step by step everything with the presentation and all. So where would you point us to learn more about product ops?
Okay, so starting with the content that we, myself and my team, already have available to the community, we have a Miro board with a lot of links, useful links about product operations. You can find there as well, my team hosts a product ops and rep talk series where we explain how we did it, how I bootstrap the team, how we set up product board, how we handle the communication issues across the company. All of those issues, you find recordings there explaining all of this. I also have some talks, as you said, you can find also there. Other than my talks, I think you, if you are into starting product operations, understanding more about product operations, we don't have a book so far. I know that Melissa Perry is announced that she will create a book. I don't know when it will be released, but Melissa Perry has a training about product operations. I think it's called Product Operations 101, Getting Started with Product Operations. If you guys don't know Melissa Perry, she is really an inspiration. I really like her because she makes product management seem simple. So she has a book that I recommend, not specifically about product operations, it's about product management. But if you want to be a good product operations person, you need to understand the practice. So she has a book that is called Escaping the Build Trap. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy. She explains the concepts in a very easy way, really easy to understand. So I strongly recommend it. And she also has a training institute where she has a CPO accelerated program and so on. And in the institute, she has a module about product operations. When I start, I look at ebook called The Rise of the Product Operations by Pendo. Pendo, they also have a very developed product operations team. And you also can look to a community that is called Product-Led Alliance. They are investing a lot on sharing content about product operations and all of that information. Not talking specifically about product operations, what can I recommend more? I really like Marty Kagan. I think everyone knows the Inspired and Empowered about Marty Kagan. I like John Cutler in a different perspective. He came from, I think he worked on Altitude. I think now it changed, but he really writes a lot of insightful things about product management. I think he has an article about product operations, but he really has some different point of views about product management.
Okay, nice. And I love it that it feels to me that product operations now is like female, you know, because it's you, it's Melissa. So it's great to know that, you know, in the end, it's technology still, right? Mostly tech companies have this kind of role, but it's great to see more women coming to the role and also being speakers and writing books. It's awesome. With this note, we can finish today. I'm really grateful that you took the time. You are a busy person, so I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for your insights and for all the practical advice.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure to be here again with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.